We're rolling. Hold on. You didn't tell me what you want to talk about.
Whatever you want me to talk about.
Yeah, well, no, that's not how it works.
Oh.
All right.
When I was a younger lawyer, I felt like there was a formula or an outline that I had to follow. Whereas, as I've gotten into it a little bit more, that's gone out the window.
So you might even be a better lawyer in that moment because you're less nervous.
100%. And I get to take more risks, you know, to grow and be better. And having that in place and that safety net in place allowed me to take more risks and really go after and be a better trial attorney and just kind of see what happens.
Attorneys are taught to challenge everything, tear things apart, break them down, but the qualities that make lawyers great can be some of the worst for running a business. At every stage of growth, running a business and practicing law can feel overwhelming. And what happens when you try to add life and family to the mix? It can feel nearly impossible. You don't have to do this alone. I'm Maria Monroy, co-founder and president of Lawric, a leading SEO agency for ambitious law firms. Each week, we hear from the industry leaders on what it really takes to run a law firm, from marketing to manifestation. Because success lies in the balance of life and law, we're here to help you tip the scales. Today, I'm live with Sevi Fisher.
I'm a partner at the Simon Law Group. I'm also the trial director and trial attorney at the Simon Law Group.
And today, we discussed jury selection.
Balancing the work-life balance. Talked about high lows.
Oh, yes.
Which was great.
Thank you so much for joining me today. So what's it like working with Bob Simon? I think everybody wants to know.
I mean, it's a treat.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a treat. Who doesn't love Bob? Like, Bob's just got that, you know, that energy that, like, I feel like everybody's just kind of...
He's very relatable, I think. He's very down to earth.
Yeah. He's just got that personality. You ever just meet somebody in your life that, like, you know, you could listen to them talk forever and it just, like, feels like there's certain things in life that you're like, oh, my gosh, the time's dragging on. Like, what time is it? Oh, my God, are we done yet? Like, when you go to the gym, sometimes I look up, I'm like, gosh, is it, like, the end of the hour yet, right?
Yeah.
But when there's certain people you talk to, I feel like Gary Dordick has that, too, where you can just kind of listen to them and, like, you could just go on for an hour and you feel like, oh man, I need more time, you know, type of thing. So Bob shares that quality, I think. That's why I work for him. That's why I work with him.
How long have you been working with him?
I've worked with him since I've been out of law school. So 2013, I started working for Bob in July of 2013 as a, like, sort of a law clerk waiting for my bar results.
Wow, really?
And so yeah, I think I was the fourth or fifth attorney there. And
how did you connect?
So Brandon and I went to law school together. And
oh,
we were actually
wow.
in the same section for the first, they call it the 1L year in law school for any non-attorneys watching. But so 1L year, we had all the same classes together and we would golf on Fridays together. And then eventually, I'm a really good golfer, you know, and Bob was trying to get his name out there a little bit. He was just getting the firm going and doing marketing and he sponsored a Clippers tournament with all the Clippers players at Trump National Golf Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Trump was president, so nobody hold that against him. So, but he texted Brandon and said, hey, I need a really good golfer. Do you know someone? He goes, hey, you got to meet Sevi. So then I met Bob for the first time at this golf tournament. Bob's a terrible golfer, by the way. But I met him there and the rest is kind of history. He basically was just like, I'm starting my firm. Like, I want to talk to you. You know, I want you to work for me. And he kind of just would make jokes about it and then eventually came up and stayed at his house. Me and my wife went out with him and his wife and he offered me a job officially.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I heard you're really good at jury selection. Can we talk about that for a second?
We can talk about that for a second. I don't know if I'm good at it. I think
I've heard you're good at it.
Well.
I researched you before.
Yeah?
Yeah. I asked around.
Okay.
I mean, we don't know anyone.
Who'd you talk to?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
But I heard you're really good at jury selection.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends on the case.
So talk to us about that. What do you think makes you good at it?
I mean, I think I just, I'm the type of guy, I like to go out, I like to have a few beers, and I like to talk to people, I like to meet new people, and I think I'm comfortable doing it, I'm comfortable in my own skin, I'm comfortable making fun of myself, and I think that's all it takes to be a good lawyer, a good trial lawyer specifically, and more I guess, even more specific to pick a jury.
For the record, Sevi's actually drinking right now. Mm-hmm. He's not being very supportive in my, I don't know what the right word is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You kind of take it easy on the drinks.
My quest to minimize drinking. Literally, he's drinking right now. For those of you that are not watching the video.
I'm a very bad influence.
You are.
I've been told that as well.
Yeah, I'm very upset about it. I've actually met Sevi's wife. She's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys are super cute.
I appreciate that.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. I'm a lucky man. Very lucky. I get told that a lot, and I know it.
I mean, she is hot. So.
Super hot.
Yeah, she is. I agree.
Just my type.
All right. So it's been, 10 years then that you've been at the Simon Law Group?
Mm-hmm.
What have been some of your challenges from then to now?
Gosh, challenges. I think, they change over time, but I would say, when you start as a lawyer at any new firm, no matter what kind of personality you have or how much the folks that hired you like you, I think the biggest challenge, at the beginning is just, some validation. You want to show them that you're worthy of working for such a great firm or something like that. So, that motivates you a lot. I think that's a big challenge, at least in the first part, until you get some results or show people that you know what you're doing at a time when you really don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Especially. Other than that, over time, as when I first started working there, I didn't have kids. Then I had kids, and then that challenge that comes with that, I think, was just, I don't want to say balancing, but managing time, just between the family and the trial aspect and work. But, our firm's super chill and very understanding. We're very family oriented. So I would say even that challenge was way less challenging than I think most other firms would have.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a pattern. Everyone seems pretty chill that works at the Simon Law Group. I wonder if that's a requirement.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the environment, Bob's chill. Brad's pretty chill. The rest of us are chill. All the partners are chill. It's not a typical, this crotchety old, person that's just, kind of scary. And it's just never been the vibe at our firm, ever.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have so many friends that are unhappy. And these are younger lawyers, right? So probably mid to late 30s that are really unhappy at their current firms. And I feel like the Simon Law Group, from everything I've heard, and people could say, oh, it's BS, but the fact that the partners have been there for so long and right out of law school, right? So then you brought in Grayson and now you're both partners. You guys have been there 9, 10 years. And the way that you guys describe what it's like working there, I think can be very expanding for the lawyers that are at a firm and they're not happy and they think that every firm is like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely not.
Right. Well, I guess, what I've seen in my 10 years is, the Simon Law Group, it's sort of the exception, not the rule, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You see all these other folks who are, starting to get their bearings and getting some good results in trial, and then they're, eventually they're out. They're starting their own firm. A lot of them are going to JHQ, what have you. We see in marketing or in results or in the courtroom as these great firms, you're seeing people leave them all the time. Not the case with our firm. Nobody, very few people leave our firm willingly. And, to be honest with you, when I went to law school, when I was growing up, I always wanted my own thing. I wanted my name on something. I wanted to be the owner, the, buck stops with me type of person. And I had that even first starting job with the Simon Law Group. I was like, oh, eventually, maybe I'll go off on my own and have my own thing. But, I just, with how great we have it and how great everybody is to us, it's not even in my plans right now.
And what do you think makes it such a great work environment?
Letting the attorneys be themselves. I've never felt a lot of oversight in my capacity as an associate, unless I need it, unless I ask for help, right? I did a number of trials, but the first trial I actually did with Bob, he's not sitting there telling me oh, you fucked this up, you did this wrong, do this, do that. He's like, no, this is you, you're doing you and you're doing a great job. So I think, that really helps And I love that aspect, actually. Sometimes it can be, you know, it's scary. You know, he's got a lot of trust in his attorneys. And also, you know, it's something that he always tells me to actually do more of, you know, let go, quit being control freak, like let go, let whoever's trying this case with you, you know, whether it's their first trial or second trial or third trial, because I want to take over everything, right? Because I feel like it's on me no matter what, as the person who's got the most experience. I'm like, if we lose, it's on me. If we win, it's on me. So I don't want people to do certain witnesses, or I want to, you know, do 99% of the trial. And he's like, dude, there was a time where I let you do those things, right? You got to let go. So, you know, there's a happy medium in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I like to control things, but there's only so much you can do, right? And if you want your team to grow, you got to let them make the mistakes that they're going to make.
100%.
And you don't want them to be afraid to make mistakes, because if they're afraid to make mistakes, then they're going to be afraid to take chances. And that's not good for growth, period.
Right. And the better they do, ultimately, and the more experience they get, the less stress some of us are going to have later on, because we've got other folks that we can trust now. We can trust them now because they have the experience of being put in those shitty, you know, uncomfortable situations. And so that's kind of how I look at it, you know, is it's going to put less stress on everybody. And, you know, everybody being better puts less stress on everybody.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Now, there are 9 partners. 9 or 10?
No, I don't even know now. 7, 8, I think 9, including.
How do you guys, like, who does what? That's a lot of partners.
That is a lot of partners. Sometimes I don't know who does what, but let me think. Brad and Jenny basically just, like, keep everybody under control, run the litigation. They do a lot of case screening, like the intake that comes in. It's funny because they're like the conservative, like, smart people in the firm. Kind of make sure everybody else doesn't, you know, take some wild flyer case that we shouldn't be taking. You know, because the trial lawyers, it's funny because the trial lawyers have a different mentality than, like, the lawyers that don't try cases. The trial lawyers, like, you could ask, like, Grayson, Bob, myself, you know, Evan, Jason now, you know, we're a little bit more, like, quick with the trigger, I would say. Like, we get a little summary of a case. We're like, oh, yeah, fuck yeah, we could take that, you know? And they're like, whoa, 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 slow down, guys. Like, we haven't even, like, read the file, you know? So that's Brad and Jenny, you know, bunch of case screening.
What do you do?
I try cases, first of all. Secondary to that, I do a lot of expert depositions. Mm-hmm. And any deposition that, you know, any non-expert deposition that might be a little bit, I don't know, just challenging or fun, I choose the trial lawyers, make sure every trial we have meetings every, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. I set meetings with all the trial team, as well as the managers of our cases. And we make sure we go about 3 months out. So if we were having a meeting today, which it's March, we'd go over all the trials for March, April, and end of May. And I make sure there's bodies on all those cases. We briefly discuss the cases, make sure we have our experts lined up, and, you know, make sure they're in a good spot and they're being worked up. And if there's any, you know, questions or advice or strategy questions, things like that, that the managers want to ask, or any other attorney, trial attorney, whatever, we use that as an opportunity to do that too.
Are you guys all responsible also for bringing in cases?
When you use the word responsible, it almost sounds like it's mandatory, but yes and no.
Well, are you expected to, I guess, is my question.
Well, I think if you've got a referral, you don't send it to another firm.
But, I'd hope not.
But I don't think anybody's, you know, nobody's sitting there saying, like, look, you, Mr. Associate or Mr. Part, like, you're...
Why haven't you?
Yeah, you're fired if you don't get X amount of referrals. That's just not the case. Like, the referrals can help you grow and make money individually. So it's better for you if you do it. So if you're not at least trying to do it, it would be kind of silly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I heard that you did this thing because of this trial you had that was during COVID, where you did a high and low negotiation. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So a high low agreement is simple. It's coming into trial and, you know, maybe a case that you're not so sure on. It's making sure you're putting your client first. And why do I say that? Well, there are certain things that happen if you outright lose a case at trial, or you don't beat the defendant's last statutory offer, which is also called a 998 in California. If you don't beat that, and you lose at trial, they can come after your client for costs. And it's not like they're coming after me, the attorney, for costs. They're coming after the client. So in my efforts leading up to trial, I always, it depends on the defense attorney, but 9 times out of 10, I always ask them, hey, you ever thought about, you know, should we talk about ILO? You know, and they all.
How common is this?
It's very, from what I've learned in talking about a lot of defense attorneys and bringing up this subject matter with them, it's kind of uncommon, I would say. But I saw Bob do it one time, and ever since then, I just loved him. It gives you a form of, we'll get back to the control. It gives you a form of control in an otherwise uncontrollable environment. And so, like, for example, I had a high-low agreement. I've had a high-low agreement where, you know, maybe the policy is $1.25 million on a specific case. I'm just using this as a hypothetical. My client maybe has a hip injury, right? She's got a hip labrum repair. She wants to settle for the case for $350,000, but the defense won't offer more than $175,000. In that case, you know, you might talk about a high-low. Hey, you know, why don't we do a high-low at trial? I'll cap it at your policy, $1.25 million. That's the highest I can get. Even if I hit this out of the park and hit it for $3, $4, $5 million, I am capped at $1.25 million. But if I lose and you defense me completely and I get zero, you're giving me $125,000, right? So I've got those barriers. And we're going to waive all post-trial motions. We're going to waive appeal. And each side's going to cover their own costs. So that gives them incentive because they're going to look like a hero if I go spank them for over that amount at trial, right? And it also helps my client because if I get zeroed out, they just went from owing the defendant money. In most cases, these clients can't afford that. They have to file bankruptcy if that happens, if they truly come after them, to maybe having $50,000 in their pocket, like, for losing. Like, it seems like a no-brainer, right? You do need to be careful on those, though, because if you have a high-low and the high is $1.25 million that you can get under any circumstances, don't go asking for $7 million at trial, right? Because if the jury gives it to you, you're going to have a pissed off client. Why don't I get the $7 million? But, you know, there's so many different factors to take into account with those. Some of it is like, what do you think the chances are of appealable issues? We had this one case that just was strung with appealable issues. It was like a labor code case. We had a really good high-low on that. We were just nervous that no matter the outcome, it was getting taken up on appeal. Going to stretch it out over another 2 to 4 years. You know, how good your client is. Injuries, whether liability is an issue. Liability is a big, you know, if liability is ever a huge dispute, I like to talk about high-lows. You can do so many different things with them too. You can get super creative.
I've never heard about this.
I think that's why I love them so much. Is like, I feel like I can, they allow me to get my creative juices flowing. Like, I had the last high low I did, we bifurcated liability from damages. We came up with this agreement and I was like, what if we just do this? Like, we separate the damages. Damages was the most expensive portion. I had like 6 damages experts. So did the defense. Number of treating doctors. The damages portion of trial was going to cost us like $125,000 just to put on our evidence. And the liability was one guy, one expert. So I was like, well, why don't we just come up with an agreement that, like, we'll keep damages for another day or just take them off the table, but we'll do a high-low agreement. We'll just try the case on liability. It'll be a 4-day trial. And based on what percentage, right, if the jury finds the defendant 0 to 24% at fault, you pay me $75,000. If the jury finds the defendant 25 to 49% at fault, you pay me $400,000. The jury finds the defendant, you know, and so on and so forth, up to the limits of their policy. And so I thought that was cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah, it was just super creative. I've never done anything like it, but it worked, and it worked in my favor. You know, it was a very quick trial, good result, happy client. Literally, this client is like she texted me after we sent her her check, and she told me that I gave her a second shot at life because she was like $5,000 in credit card debt and, like, you know, almost had to, you know, file bankruptcy. One of the best clients of all time, and I love her.
How did you have that idea? Like, what made you separate? Like,
just, you know, I just feel like I get those ideas in cases that I'm not 100% confident in, where I look at the evidence and I'm a little bit, I wouldn't say not confident in, but I feel like there's a lot more risk.
Probably makes you more confident going into trial.
Right.
So you might even be a better lawyer in that moment because you're less nervous. 100%.
And I get to take more risks.
Right.
Right. Which we were talking about that earlier. You want your, as you know, to grow and be better, you want to be able to take risks. And having that in place and that safety net in place allowed me to take more risks and really go after and be a great, you know, a better trial attorney and just kind of see what happens. So yeah, I love them. I love them a lot. Unless it's just like a great case, you know it, you know you're going to go kick the shit out of the other side. I'll never do a high-low in that case. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're never going to agree to my terms.
Yeah.
It's got to be a case where both sides kind of like, well, this could go either way. 50-50.
Yeah, you're creating a win-win, basically, where everyone feels good about it, but not maybe not necessarily great because it wasn't. Didn't know to begin with anyways.
And in every high low I've done, right? Like, we want to make everybody look good. Whether it's, and it's not just us and the clients, but the defense attorney, they got a job to do too, right? They've got a client, they're trying hard, and you know, we make each other's worlds go around. And every high low I've ever done, whether I've just done a really good job, got a great result or not, every single one, the defense lawyer's client has been super happy. And that's important. For many reasons. Everybody got to get out of there and look good.
Well, now I'm curious, why is it important?
Them looking good to their client gets them more business and gets them more trust from their client. Their client, when I say their client, I'm talking about insurance companies.
Right, but why does that help you?
Why does it help me?
Yes.
Well, the more they like me and more approachable and trustworthy I am to the defense lawyer. Right.
And
the next time I'm going to get it, they're going to say, this guy's a reasonable dude. We're going to come up, you know, with stipulations, agreements if we can. I know Sevi's approachable. And I like that. That's one of the things I think I'm really good at is creating those relationships. And they make my life 10 times better and easier and make the defense lives 10 times easier because nobody, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I have a relationship like that with the defense lawyer. There's the one defense lawyer out there. It's always going to be an asshole. They're always, you know, so you can't really negotiate with them.
Those you are approachable though.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only hung out with you a few times and I feel like I know you.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're very approachable.
Well, thanks.
And maybe that's why people say you're good at jury selection.
Yeah.
Well, do you think you connect with the jury?
It's funny. I think I do because I don't feel like I do anything great. Like, everyone's always like, do you have an outline for jury selection? I'm like, no, not really. Like, I just go talk to some folks.
Do you use your intuition?
Yeah. Yeah. But mainly I just vibe with them, you know?
I
like to vibe with jurors. I like, look, you just got to put yourself in their shoes. They're in a fucked up situation. They got required to be here under the law. For lawyers, it's cool. But for these folks who maybe like can't afford to take a day off or whatever, they're hating their life. And they just got told that they're here because of a car accident. They are immediately, before I even talk, they hate us. So my job, my goal when I stand up is I want them to like me immediately.
And you're likable, though. That must come easy to you.
You'd be surprised. The first couple times I did jury selection, I think I was a little stiff and lawyer-like and used stupid words. When I was a younger lawyer, I felt like there was a formula or an outline that I had to follow. Whereas, as I've gotten into it a little bit more, that's gone out the window. You know, I've got a couple questions that if I get based on how a juror's answer, like, I know how they're going to go for me in that case. The other 90% of jury selection is just me getting to know them and, you know, making sure they know that just because I'm a lawyer in a suit today, like, I just want them to know I'm normal. Because I am, you know, like, if I'm not in a suit, like, you know, this is the most dressed up I get without a suit on. You know, other than that, it's like sweats.
Is you dressed up?
Yeah, this is like, everyone's always like, you know, did you just come off the golf course? I'm like, no, that's just my casual gear, you know? So
side note for those of you not watching the video, I had to dress down for this episode because Sevi showed up.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. You probably appreciate me doing it too because you're probably more comfortable.
I am way more comfortable.
Yeah.
So what's really exciting in your life right now?
Exciting in my life. My son lost his second tooth last night.
Oh, how many kids do you guys have? Three?
I've got three, yeah. Yeah, so a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 6-year-old.
How do you balance? I know you didn't want to use that word earlier, but how do you balance work and life? And I think working it, I swear to you guys, like, this is not a promo for the Simon Law Group, but I know that for Bob, that's important. So it probably, like, it's part of the culture at the firm. I would assume that it's okay for everyone to have a work-life balance.
Yeah. I mean, before having kids, I felt like I would go to every seminar. Everything I could get my hands on, I would go to.
I haven't seen you at one in like a year.
Precisely. I have to go to the ones and pick and choose the ones that, you know, whereas before maybe I'd go to 12 to 15 a year.
Wow.
Now I go to like six max. And I try to go to some of the family oriented ones. I love the Abota one in Hawaii because I can take my kids.
Abota. That's a California one, right?
It's a national one, but yes, it's Abota, California. Yeah, you know what Abota is?
Yeah. But I've never been. So.
Yeah, so I like that one. I like the Palm Springs one. It's at a family-friendly resort, Omni, in Palm Springs.
And
I still like
that?
Omni, even though I sued them. But
what conference is that?
CAOIE. It's like a CAOC and IE crossover.
But you do
OCTLA too.
You do mainly state conferences?
State, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I try not to go out of state. Once in a while, there's like a ski one in like, you know, Western Trial Lawyers Association does one in my home state, in Idaho. So if I can kill two birds and see some family with that at the same time, I might try to do that. But yeah, very rarely.
So when you go to conferences, you bring the family?
I would say 80% of the time.
Wow. Kudos to you.
It doubles too, right? So I was talking about the Abota Hawaii. Our family trip every year is going to Hawaii. And what we do is we do a week of the conference, which the conference is only like a 3-hour session of talks. The rest of it is just meetups, happy hours. So we do an hour or a week of the conference, and then we do a week on either the front end or the back end for the family. So I turn them into my family vacations just to make it easy with time management and trip preparations and all that. Try to make as many of those into just like family vacations as I can.
If I did that, we would be on vacation the whole year.
You know,
what about day to day?
Day to day is you know, it's funny because it's not a 9-to-5 job. It's not, it's weird, right? So there's days where like, you know, there's days where I have zero appearances. I'm an appearance guy, right? Like if there's not a deposition to be had or a trial to prepare for or be at or somebody who needs my help preparing for a deposition or advice on how to prepare for trial, if there's none of that real serious stuff going on, I can go to, you know, family stuff. I take my son to he does parkour class every Thursday.
No way. Yeah. There's such a thing?
Yes, he loves it.
That is so LA.
And we've got a thing. We go to Good Stuff. It's this C- restaurant that's like just in the vicinity because there's no other restaurants, but like I don't even like it, but I go because he wants, it's our thing, you know, like we go there, it's just mine and his time, and like he'll eat like Mickey Mouse pancakes and bacon every Thursday, and I'll have like two IPAs and then we'll go home.
All right.
I try to be present. I only golf during the weekdays. I'm a big golfer. And
no, you don't say.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You hadn't mentioned
it. In case you didn't know. I'm also really, really good. But I go during the weekdays. I don't go on the weekends because the weekends are dedicated to my family if I'm not in trial. Straight up. I think you just got to enjoy what you're doing. If you don't, get the hell out. Go do your own thing. If you don't like where you're at or where you're working and you're not happy, you know, do something about it.
Thank you so much to Sebi Fisher for everything he shared with us today. If you found this story valuable, please share it with someone you want to see succeed. Subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review. It goes a long way to help others discover the show. Catch us next week on Tip the Scales with me, Maria Monroy, president of LawRank. Hear how the best in the business broke out of limiting beliefs, overcame adversity, and built a thriving, purpose-driven business in the process. If you found the story valuable,
follow him on TikTok.
Please share it.
I don't have a TikTok. I'm just kidding.